We're going through the book of Hebrews as we're in Advent, which works out really well. We're going to do Hebrews to the end of the year, and we're calling it a fresh look at Jesus and also encouragement for the cause. Jen preached last week, who is also my spouse. And I'm biased, I realize, but man, she killed it. If you missed it, you should listen in. It was super good. It's a tough act to follow. It's really good. We're in chapter 11 now, and it's a unique letter because it's a sermon, effectively, that's written to a community, a Jewish community. It's written real late in the scripture in terms of like chronologically when the different books of the Bible were written. It's towards the end, and it's a Jewish community that was considering giving up and turning back after decades of following Jesus together as a community. And there's this this pastor, this author who's writing them this letter, encouraging them, man, don't give up, don't give up. Keep leaning in because the best is yet to come, effectively. And he's encouraging them, reminding them of the beauty and the power of Jesus. He's encouraging them to keep going, don't turn back. The kingdom of God is among us. And in chapter 11, it's really powerful because he's gone through a lot of technical arguments. And now it's at like this, he's like kind of building to a frenzy, the author. And in chapter 11, we speak about faith. There's this huge call to faith, and the author defines what that means, which I think is interesting, because how often do we say, like, have faith, you know? Like, we can do it, have faith, believe. We can hear that in, like sort of team analogies, whether that's, like, sports teams or work teams. Like, come on, team, have faith, we can stick it out, like, it's going to happen. Or if you're a fan of Justin Bieber, you're, like, a believer. Sort of the same idea, you have faith in something. What does that mean? Because we kind of throw it around. You guys heard that we're hosting the youth group at our house. I started a project like a year ago when we moved into our house to do a lot of work in it. And I just never finished that long project. And when a youth group comes into your house, it puts a different fire under your feet to finish with so many people moving around. And our fireplace forever, when we moved in, I demoed the whole thing out. It was all brick. It covered the whole wall up into the ceiling. And I like jackhammered the whole thing off all the way down to the floor, everything. And I ended up leaving a giant like hole in the wall. And I was going to rebuild it at some point. I just never got around to it. And then like the youth group, and then I got so used to it, I was like, it's quite normal to have exposed like lumber and studs and whatever. It just felt very normal, felt very like, it's very deconstructed of a super postmodern house. And then I realized, we should probably put that back. And so as the youth group was coming, I started like a fire to like get this thing done. And I called some people, figured out how to do it, and I had to rebuild like the facade with bricks. And I'm not very good, I'm not a mason, so I just was sort of figuring it out. And I had very small windows of time to work because of the chaos of life and work and kids and everything else. So I find like little snatches of time, like, and I just go for it as fast as I can. And I got home from working at an hour before youth group was coming. I'm like, oh, I should lay some brick. And so I like lay out like boards and blankets, and I mix up this mortar, and I start like laying brick, and I'm like, oh no, this isn't good. Like, there's not enough time to do this plan that I had planned on. And as the leaders show up 30 minutes before youth group, I'm like mortar everywhere. I'm holding this bucket and like a trowel, and I got bricks, and they walk in and they're like, what are you doing? Like, no. Like, why would you? I was like, hey, time is limited. You have to work in the time that you have. I was like, have faith that we'll be ready. And they literally turned and just walked back out the door, like, I think in a bit of a panic. Like, where are we going to have youth group? I'm like, have faith, people. We'll pull this off. And I didn't see them for 30 minutes until the start of youth group. And I started flying, and I slung the thing, and I stacked the bricks, and I got it all out, and they came back in, and it was as if it was never there. And I'm like, I told you, have faith. You, like, I could see that we could pull this off, but you couldn't see it. Have faith, right? So sometimes you're like, when we talk about having faith, you are holding a vision of something that you know is possible that you could pull off that nobody else around you realizes that you can, because there's something else driving you in that moment to be able to see it, right? The author's kind of like that. He's yelling like, have faith, have faith. And he says this in verse 1 and 2. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Is what he says. And then he goes on and says, this is what the ancients were commended for. But he says, faith is confidence in what we hope for, and it's assurance in what we don't see. It's not a general, like, religious attitude to life. which I think is different. And it's not trying to believe difficult or impossible things just for the sake of it, like kind of like a pipe dream. It's different. Dictionary.com defines faith as complete trust in something or someone. Like complete trust in something or someone. And we know it. I mean, we do it often. Think about going to a bank. You go to a bank and you put your money in the bank only because you have some sort of faith and confidence that it's going to be there when you want to go get it, when you need it. And there's even signs that say this is federally backed up to $250,000 per account. And it's like there's a faith because the Fed backs the thing up. You're like, I will trust my money in this bank because I know that I can get it when I need it, and I know that it's going to be there. Otherwise, why would you trust all that you've made to put it in there? And we also know when that faith wavers, because remember in the Great Recession in 2008, there was starting to be rumors that banks were potentially going to fail, and there was like a story that ran that Washington Mutual may fail. And a good friend of mine had all of his money at Washington Mutual, and we were talking about it, and he's like, I think I'm going to go pull it all out right now. And I was like, but if you and everybody else pull it all out, it will fail. He's like, I don't have faith in it, and I'm not going to trust it. And he drove straight to the bank, pulled everything out, and within 3 or 4 days, the whole thing was gone because everybody else did the same thing. So we know what it is to have faith in something like that, but we also know what it is to lose faith in something like that. And it has drastic outcomes in the way that you live your life, how you order your life, and what you actually do with it, right? So we know faith, but when it comes to spirituality generally, when we talk about faith, faith is the ability to look at God and to trust him for everything. That's really what it comes down to. It's just the ability to trust God with everything, with life, with your life, with your future, with everything else that's going on around you. Whenever we baptize people, we baptized 6 people this year. Whenever we're over the pool, we always say the same thing. Like, are you willing to put your trust in Jesus with your whole life? I mean, that's a call to faith. That's the question of faith. Have you lined up your abstract checklist? Will you put your trust in Jesus for all of your life? Will you do that? And then people will say yes or no in that moment. That's faith. Hope is looking at the future and then trusting God for the future. But faith is looking at God and actually trusting him for everything. But when you line those things up, when you put faith underneath hope, it's the thing that actually gives it some kind of assurance. Like hoping for a certain future and a certain present reality, and trusting a God that you believe can actually direct it is the idea. Faith is hearing and believing the promises of God. Like the promises that come through the scripture that the God who created the entire universe is also the redeemer of the world and somehow is working through this story of this family of Abraham to work and bring about a savior that would be the redeemer that would transform the entire world to a new creation, somehow free from brokenness and sin and decay and death and everything that plagues it, and would make a new creation, a new world, a new heavens and earth where everything is as God actually intends it to be. That ultimately through Jesus, God's making everything new. Is this promise of faith that comes through the scriptures. And that kind of faith actually allows you to live quite differently. So Jen ended her sermon last week in chapter 10, and it said, we don't belong to those who shrink back, but we belong to those who have faith and who are saved, which means, like, faith is central. Faith is central to a life that follows Jesus. Faith is central to a life that follows Jesus, and it allows you to live differently. Notice that it's not saying faith is a lack of doubt. It's not saying faith is a lack of questions and wondering and uncertainty. It's not saying that faith means you have everything figured out. Like, faith is actually quite the contrary, because if you had everything figured out, that would be what was seen. But it's an assurance in what is unseen, which means even in the midst of uncertainty, even in the midst of the questions, because some questions you can't answer, some questions you have to live into the answer, and some of that takes a lifetime and even more. So faith is the ability to put your trust even when you don't have it all figured out, even when you don't know, because the questions and the process is all actually part of faith. Instead, it's a trust in a God that is who he says he is, and it's going to finish what he said he's going to finish. And that somehow you believe in him, Jesus, like his life and his ministry and his death and his resurrection was actually the birth of God's kingdom, his movement to restore the world, that he forgave and he reconciled and he welcomes us back and he gives us his spirit. And as he transforms you, he's inviting you to partner with him to see a world transformed around you. And even when everything looks lost or broken in the midst of you giving yourself fully to this endeavor of God's kingdom among us, you have faith that in the long view, that is what's going to win out because you know God's ultimately going to put it back together. And in that life of the kingdom, that life of a faith that you live out is the thing that will go on forever. It's like there's a old Jewish rabbinical saying that whenever you do a good deed, is the language they would use, whenever you would give yourself in particular ways for the life of God's kingdom that has been birthed here and that is going to go on forever, it's like you're planting a tree in the kingdom of God, in this new creation that will ultimately sprout and grow on and be there forever is the idea. We were driving home yesterday or Friday from school, and one of my sons, they really wanted us to find a house with a big tree they could put a tree house in. And our tree is quite small. And so they're like, hey, what if we planted a tree at the house so we could build a tree house in? I was like, your kids may be able to play in that tree house, but maybe the kids after those. You know what I mean? Like you don't understand. Like, there's a long view. There's a long view in faith that we can say, yeah, we could plant trees for your grandkids to have a tree house in. It's that kind of an idea. But it gives you a different perspective. It gives you a different lens. It gives you a different ability to live into the present. It gives you a different trajectory for the future. And there's a trust in it. There's an assurance that you can live a different kind of life with a different kind of a goal, with a different kind of perspective when you have faith. Because faith then becomes like a confidence and an assurance in God and in his particular way of life, which can be challenged in a thousand different ways, but it's a confidence and assurance in God and his particular way of life, even if it doesn't all make sense and even if it's quite different than the way the world around us works, even if it's quite countercultural to the world that we live in. Faith is the assurance that you can still live a life of the kingdom no matter what's swirling around you. And he goes on, he says, faith is what the ancients were commended for. Because on the one hand, chapter 11 says, here's what faith is. But on the other hand, he's like, and here's like the whole story of the redemptive history of God's people, and the whole thing's actually a faith story. The whole thing is a story built on faith that we're standing on the shoulders of, is what he says. The ancients were commended. It's like one long rant, creation to new creation, covenant to new covenant, Abraham to the Messiah through the lens of faith. And instead of reading it to you, because it's quite long, I'll summarize the characters for you. He says, by faith, we understand that God made the universe at a command. By faith, Abel brought the very best of his stuff as a sacrifice, and after he was murdered by his brother, God will still reward him for his faith through death, even out the other side of death. By faith, Enoch was taken, the scripture says, by God without dying, but it says that he pleased God. In other words, without faith, you can't even begin to please God. By faith, Noah built an ark because he was told that rain was coming, but he didn't know what rain was. Think about that. It's like when my son was 2 and it rained for the first time in Southern California in his existence. He's like, what is this water from the sky? You know, they get no idea. No idea that water comes from the sky because we live here. By faith, Abraham left his home and his family based on a call of God to go to a land that he didn't know what it was or where it was. By faith, Sarah, in her old age, had faith in a God that could give life where there was none because she was well beyond the ability to carry a child, that she could still live on the promises of God. By faith, Abraham was willing to sacrifice his only son, whom he banked the whole promise of God on because he believed in a God that could raise the dead. By faith, Jacob passed on the blessing. By faith, Isaac passed on the blessing. By faith, Joseph, who was in Egypt, had the foresight to say, God's going to carry us out of this land. So when you go hundreds of years from now, make sure you take my bones with me because I want to be in the promised land when we get there. Don't leave me behind. Take my bones when you go. But by faith, Moses' parents defied the edict of a king to have him killed and instead hid him and risked their own lives. By faith, Moses left privilege in Egypt to join his people and lead him out of Egypt into the wilderness. By faith, the people crossed through the Red Sea untouched on dry land. By faith, Rahab protected the Israeli spies. By faith, it goes on to describe this crowd and the incredible, miraculous things that happened in their life and the suffering and the hardship and the persecutions and the torture and the faith that they embodied in this life of the kingdom as a sort of precursor in the face of so much persecution and hardship, longing and awaiting the coming of Jesus, whom they never actually saw. By faith. The whole thing is the faith story of God's people in like redemptive history all the way up to Jesus. And it's really the story that we've inherited. You realize that? Like when you get married, you marry into a family, you inherit that other person's story. And you may not realize it at first, but then when you start like stepping into like holiday time and you start figuring out whose traditions you're going to participate in, and then parents start fighting, and then when you have kids and they become grandparents, like the ante raises very high on who participates in what traditions and how that. Like, you know what it is to inherit a story. That's what happens when you step into becoming a child of God. You're like grafted into the family of God. This is your story now. This is your faith story. These are the shoulders of giants that you now stand on. Like the things they did, the way they persevered, the faith that they carried, the way they carried suffering and hardship is your story. It's your story. How would you add to that, though, is what I would say. Because it's one thing to look back and say, yeah, we inherited the faith story. But what's your faith story? How are we joining into the tradition? And how do we live from it and actually embody it in our own lives? Have you thought about that? What's your faith story? What are the ways that you could say, by faith, we've seen God do this. By faith, we stepped out in this way. By faith, God moved. By faith, even when we couldn't see the outcome, we were willing to follow. I can share a little bit of mine, just by example. Maybe it'll spark you in yours. By faith, Jen and I got married, which I say is by faith because I come out of a very broken story. Everyone in my family had been divorced 2, 3, 4 times. So there was great apprehension about getting married. But by faith, we got married and said, that ends with us. We're creating a new storyline in our family. By faith, we stepped into a marriage together. By faith, we heard a call of God to plant a church. So we quit our jobs, sold our house, and moved to a new city with a 17-month-old and a newborn that was just a couple of weeks old and said, let's do it. Oh, that was faith. In faith, we faced all kinds of resistance. We faced resistance spiritually and socially to a new work that God wanted to do in that place, and we, by faith, trusted in God to all the resistance that came, whether it be a spiritual attack, the kind of thing Jen described last week where she would wake up in the middle of the night and there'd be this crushing presence on her, and then there'd be like a presence in the house where all the kids are crying out of bed at the same time, and I'd go into my oldest son's room and he was out of bed pointing to something that wasn't there, and I'd pray and it would lift and there'd be a peace in the house. It was nightly existence that we lived by faith. We're like, we got to the point where we're like, we don't go to bed without praying because sweet Jesus, we can't wake up at 2 a.m. like that again. And it was like that kind of by faith. We're going to live day by day by faith. We persevered through all the things that came, cancer in Jen in that season, autoimmune diseases that came, respiratory illnesses in my sons, and by faith, we said, God's called us here, so we're going to stay here. By faith, when we thought there wasn't enough, God somehow provided the weeks that we couldn't buy groceries because we were just giving it all up and going for broke for this church plant, and we'd go to the grocery store and realize we didn't have money to buy, so we'd leave them there, and we'd go home, and like a day later, there would be groceries on our doorstep, and we didn't know where they came from, and we didn't tell anybody that we put the groceries back because that was too embarrassing. Like, by faith, somehow God sees us, and he provided. By faith, we would pray, and we'd see like demonic presence lift off of people. By faith, we'd pray, and we'd see God miraculously heal people. And I've told you those stories, wild stories. But by faith, we saw people come to faith, and we saw people get baptized, and we saw kids dedicated. We saw people who got baptized in our church raised up to be leaders, leave their careers, become staff members and pastors and ultimately elders in the life of the church. It's by faith. By faith, we saw God do so. It's like we had a front row seat just because the ticket was faith to see God move in really, really powerful ways. But by faith, when it was time to leave the city that we're in Laguna Beach, we heard God say, it's time to shut this down, but we're not done with you yet. And so we shut it down and moved to a new city to plant and to start over with a core of people that were commuting from Costa Mesa by faith. And then we just like sort of, okay, God, every time we heard God speak, the whole faith journey was more of a sharpening of hearing, a discerning, God, what are you calling us to do next? And then the courage to just step out and go for it, regardless, regardless. It's like by faith. By faith, we saw God raise up people to be leaders and ultimately church planters that have launched out of this place. By faith, we've seen radical generosity, like radical. I'm talking community groups willing to cut back their budget in radical ways in order to take all of the money that they had they would have spent on themselves to give it away to other people that are in need. Kids doing the same. Like, it's unbelievable generosity in this church. Paying each other's medical bills, paying each other's rent when they're on hard times, giving each other cars. Like, we've seen a radical abundance and generosity, because we say if Jesus has risen, then dang it, we better embody it, right? Otherwise, what are we even saying? Ah, but we've seen it by faith. We've seen it. I could tell you so many stories. How would you describe your faith story? Like, with what lens? How would you describe your faith story? If you said, by faith we saw, what would that story be? What would it look like? Do you have a faith story? As in, could you tell it that way? Do you have a lens that you can see it through in that sense? Because I could tell that same story differently. I'd be like, well, we saddled up and went to planted a church and we moved. No. That's one way to say it, but it isn't what happened at all. Is an entire spirit sort of faith journey that we followed and we were broken in over and over again. Like, there's different ways to see your story. And maybe you're here and you think you don't have a faith story, but I would actually encourage you, perhaps look at your life with a new lens. Maybe you don't even have faith yet, but we have a God that moves and that speaks and is at work in your life long before you're even able to see it or respond to it. And I would encourage you to look at your story. Like, what is your faith story and how you've seen God move in your life? And then I would say, how can you perhaps begin crafting that story now, or even continue crafting that story in your own life? How do you live by faith? Now, this thing tells a story of the faith of those who went before us. And there's a couple of things, there's a couple of observations that like leap out at me as I read this faith story that I think applies to us pretty dramatically when we talk about crafting our own faith story that I think actually encourage us and call us forward, that call to us. One is this. Man, these people never saw fulfillment. Like all these stories, these heroes, they never saw the fulfillment of their faith, not in its fullness. Think about that. All these generations, all these people that laid it all down, verse 11, 13, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. That's wild. All these giant faith stories are the stories of seeing and longing and participating in, but never fully seeing it come into its fullness. Abraham and Sarah, who got called to the promised land, when they died, the only thing they owned was a cave that they were buried in. Think about the people of Israel that were led out of the wilderness. They wandered for 40 years in the wilderness, and none of them over the age of, I think, 20 got to step into the promised land. Like, there's a wild reality. They never saw the fulfillment. Those who suffered and died were hanging on for the promise of a new creation and resurrection, but they died having never actually seen it. They didn't see their hopes fulfilled, and yet they held on to the promise and the hope nonetheless. And so when we talk about your faith story, I'm talking about the past up to this point. How have you seen God move in your past? But I would almost encourage you to look to the future. Like, what does it look like to have faith in your life moving forward? Like for the hopes that are ahead. But I'd almost frame it in like a bigger question. Would you even trust God for that, even if in your own lifetime there's little sign that you see it fulfilled? Oh, that's a big question. What does it look like for you to craft a faith story moving forward in your life? Maybe it has to do with your family and how you're operating as a family, or maybe how you're raising your kids and your family for who they are. Because to be people of the kingdom means you would live quite differently than people in this culture, which means you have to take pretty intentional faith steps to shape a family and parenting philosophies and actions around that sort of reality. Or maybe you're single and you're looking for a spouse, and there's like a component in which perhaps you're getting tired, and you're like, maybe I should just settle because I have all these things in light of the kingdom and the faith that I'm looking for and hoping for. Maybe that just doesn't exist. And I would say, have faith. I'll say have faith. Or maybe it's just like, maybe God isn't going to bring me some. Like, have faith, I would say. What's your faith story? Maybe it's just in your work. Maybe it's what you're striving for or hoping for or working towards. Like, what's the faith story in that? What's the faith story maybe like in the ministry that God's put in your heart, or a nonprofit, or like a social enterprise, or your dreams or goals, or the future, or like the God-sized hopes that he's put in your life? How are you seeing that and stepping into it? Like perhaps it's healing. Maybe there's like a faith story and wanting to see people healed, but it requires the ability to like see it and hope for it and step into actually praying for people to see healings, and then to see a whole lot of no's too, right? Or maybe it's wholeness in your life or in others' lives, or maybe it's reconciliation, or maybe it's working towards justice or mercy. Or maybe it's even faith to say, we're going to build a company or an organization or a life of employment that is so radically focused on the kingdom of pouring ourselves out for the healing of the world that, I mean, we're going to have faith that we're going to give this much away is what our goal is. And then the next year is going to be more. And you know what I mean? Like, what is your faith story moving forward in your life and in your relationships? And would you trust God for it if in your lifetime there was little sign that it would be fulfilled? Or maybe this month there's little sign, or maybe this year there's little sign. Like, would you continue to give yourself for it, knowing, because you have that faith and that confidence in a God who's remaking the world and putting it back together again? That's one. Two is, not only do they never see fulfillment, but this is a people that lived really prophetically. Like, they lived a prophetic existence. It's one thing to speak of prophecy like a word of encouragement. It's one thing to speak of prophecy like God gives you something for someone else, whether that's a scripture or whatever it is in terms of encouragement for another person. It's another thing to speak of prophecy like a prophetic life as your whole existence is a prophetic existence. So prophetic is when God's future breaks into our present in order to draw the present towards his like desired future. Does that make sense? So all the gifts of the Spirit, all that is God's Spirit prophetically empowering us to live into and move towards this life of his kingdom. But it's possible that your whole existence, your whole life, they lived a prophetic life where everything they did and embodied was like a picture of the kingdom that was moving us towards what God's doing, right? So look at verse 32, 11, 32. He says, what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon or Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who he just told us about. He's going to go and tell us a little more. Who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised. Who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword. Whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawn in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and ill-treated. The world was not worthy of them. That is the most baller line. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. It's describing a prophetic existence is what it's describing. It's a people that lived like prophetically in their lives. They lived so countercultural and so different to the way the world worked. They actually like embodied it. God's future breaking into the present through their lives and the way that they chose to live. They were like completely out of sync with their culture and time because they were living the realities of God's future kingdom. That like by faith, they were living out God's future world. And I love that line that it says the world didn't deserve them. They never saw the fulfillment of Jesus, yet they lived it out anyway. Like to live with a trust in Jesus in light of the reality of his kingdom that is actually among us means that you're gonna live a life that looks really different to the culture around you. You're gonna live a life that looks really different to the culture around you, which is a prophetic kind of a life. It's just a prophetic kind of life. The norm and the status quo and business as usual fitting in, it won't be for us. We're embodying a different way of life altogether that actually reflects Jesus and his kingdom, and we're called to live prophetically as well. So I would ask you the question, do you have the courage to live countercultural lives in light of the kingdom of Jesus? Now, I'm naive, so I always just make the assumption that we all are. That's my operating, like, yeah, guys, we're in. You know what I mean? I'm the guy who's like, we're streaking through the quad to the gymnasium. There's nobody behind me. I just assume we're all doing that. Thank you, old school fans. But maybe I shouldn't make the assumption. Maybe I should actually ask the question. Do you have the courage to live countercultural lives in light of the kingdom of Jesus? And that comes in all kinds of ways. I mean, maybe it's with the way you deal with technology, or maybe it's your understanding of pornography or media, or how you date, just sex generally, how we understand that and operate in sex in our life. Or maybe it's just the different idols that grab hold of us, or maybe it's how we understand generosity and money and or how we give ourselves away, or maybe it's about just our time and how we manage that and what we do with it, or maybe it's about like serving in our life, or maybe it's about gossip, or maybe it's about how you do your work, or again, raise your kids, or like how you engage in anything in your life, whether it's from politics to driving to friendship to neighbors to nationalism to sports to hobbies to free time to like on and on. Like maybe it's how you engage in invitation, how you engage in a life of the Spirit, how you engage in generosity and the nonviolence of Jesus and self-giving love in the world, how you engage in commitment to what it is to be part of his people. All that stuff, when you live in light of the kingdom, actually can run quite countercultural. Can you live a countercultural life, and will you? And you got to ask the question, because it's the whole thing is they're like chopped in half and sawn in two and burned a lot. You're like, are you willing to suffer for it? Is a question that it's just begging to ask you if you were to live a countercultural life when it comes to faith. That's two. The third thing is it says God planned something better, which I like. It says God planned something better. So look at the last two verses of the chapter. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. It says they were commended for their faith, but they never received what was promised because God actually planned something better for us, but it's together that we're made perfect. They were like this advance sign of the kingdom that was coming. They were like this sort of prophetic sign of what was to come through his death, through his resurrection, through the Spirit, the kingdom, all that. And we're people that are like sort of built on their faith story. But now they get to share in the reality of the kingdom because we've seen it come into fulfillment. Does that make sense? They get to experience it for themselves at the resurrection. That's what the whole made perfect thing means. That we're built on their legacy, but they get to share in our fulfillment. That the story is ours, and we essentially inherited it when we came to faith. That's our roots. That's our people. That's our past, and it brought us here. So I would ask you this question. It's a big one. The other ones were pretty big. What's your faith story? What does it look like to build a life on faith? Can you live a countercultural prophetic life? These are all faith questions. The last one is this. I mean, as we look back on this faith story and all that's come, the roots that we have, our history, our tradition, the shoulders of these giants that we stand on, as we look at all that we've inherited, that has given us what we have as a people of the kingdom and a people of the Spirit who get to live this life and participate in this right now. Do you realize what it cost for so many generations before us to have what we have and experience what we experience in Jesus and his Spirit? Do you realize what shoulders you stand on? Or do you just take it all for granted? You're like, it's sunny outside, I don't know. Should we? Should we give it? I think we're gonna give it to myself this week. You know what I mean? Like, think about it. Do you Do you realize what it costs to get here? Do you realize whose shoulders you're standing on? And it's going to go on and say, and so in light of this great cloud of witnesses that's just cheering you on, everybody's cheering you on to cast off everything that hinders so you can continue to run the race. Like, do you realize what it costs for so many for us to have what we have and experience what we experience? Do you take it for granted? Do you take this life that we get to live for granted, or do we actually capture the day every day and live into it? You know what I mean? Like do you capture the day every day and live into it? Do you see the beauty and the privilege of what we have and what we've been given? Do you grab it and do you go for it? I would encourage you to, and I would say, man, let's seize the day and not waste a single moment, because this is an incredible story that we've been given. It's an incredible story that we've been given to live into. So I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. And as they do, I just invite you, lean in, own your faith, live from it as we celebrate this God who is with us.